I've got a quick question for you, alright? I wanna hear your thoughts, I wanna know what's on your mind. I've got a quick question for you, alright? The answer's not important, I'm just glad that we could talk tonight. So what's your favorite?
How did you get?
If there's an answer, they're gonna find it. I think you'll have a great time here. I think you'll have a great time here.
So hello again and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel, the podcast where two best friends and comedy writers ask each other questions and give each other answers. I am one half of that podcast. My name is Daniel O'Brien, and I work for a show called Ba-da-ba-ba-bop, Last Week Tonight. And I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Soren Bowie, who works for Our American Dad! Soren, say hello.
Hello, everybody. I'm Soren Bowie. I was in a panic trying to think of, like, well, he did a song for his. What would be a fun song for mine? And immediately I was like, American Man. And then and then you did it.
Good.
American Band.
I really, this might shock you, but I came up with yours first and then sort of backed into mine. Like, well, I'm not going to scrap American Dad, American Band. That's gold. What is something that is equally golden? Last Week Tonight subbed in for I'm Loving It. Okay. Yeah, sure. We're on a clock here.
No, I thought it worked. I was startling at first when ba-da-ba-ba-ba came up. But it's also the exact right number of syllables, and I'm big about that. So it's
I'm huge about that when people try to parody a song on Twitter. And I'm like, it's worse. Just, you don't need to be musically gifted to count the syllables. Just do that.
And it makes such a difference. It makes, especially when you go long. Like what you're trying to like shoehorn in is too long. It's so obvious and glaring.
Yeah.
I'm also guilty of it a lot anyway. So
are you?
Disappointing. I've done it before. It's just like you have one where you're like, I don't know, but this one's also really good. I'll just give it a shot. And you throw it out there.
<You're> like, I don't know. Even as I said, it didn't sound good. Forget it, everybody.
Thanks to Avast for supporting Quick Question. Avast's new all-in-one solution, Avast One, helps you take control of your safety and privacy online through a range of features. Learn more about Avast One at avast.com.
Thanks to Truebill for supporting our podcast. From forgotten free trials to automatic renewals, when big companies keep charging you, Truebill is your secret weapon to save you money on subscriptions you don't need. Go right now, truebill.com/QQ. It could save you thousands a year.
I'd like to, I think I want to start doing that at the end of a lot of my tweets, just to just come back to them and say, forget about it, everybody. Forget this one.
About it.
Don't worry about this one, guys.
Who, you know this, you're familiar with the song, We Built This City?
Yeah.
He just, you know, a lot of times throughout the day, you have a song stuck in your head and you just sing like a portion of it. He regularly sings, she's got big titties.
Jesus.
And it makes me laugh so hard. Because, first of all, it's completely inappropriate for a work setting. And he's not doing it like on purpose. Like, it's just like in his head as that. So it just gets me every single time.
I like to think that that's how they started writing that song. Yeah. And they're like, well, it can't be about that. I mean, that's just going to get us started, but we got to do something grander than that.
I think they probably started with, like, that was the song. And then like somebody came back to them like, you're not allowed to do that song. And they're like, are you kidding me?
Why not? It's the past. Oh, like, I know. I know it's the past, but still.
Dan, I had to tell you a story about something that happened to me recently.
Oh, great.
That you're going to, I don't know how, actually, I have no idea how you feel about it because you have no context for it. But my wife and I did our first overnight stay away from our children.
Wow.
Since my daughter was born.
How far did you go?
9 miles.
I knew it was going to be super close.
There was even a point where I almost went home to go let the cat in because our babysitter stayed with them, and she had trouble getting the cat to come to her. Understandably, cats don't. There's like three people that they'll listen to, and
And so
hold on, please.
So sorry about that.
Did you just get LaCroix all over yourself?
No, I was trying to take my hoodie off as subtly and non-invasively, non-obtrusively as possible. And I think until the end I was nailing it. it's the head part when you're wearing headphones and talking to someone. That's the part that's really going to throw you.
but we went and stayed in a downtown. We stayed in a hotel downtown, and it was really fun. And like when we were going out to dinner and we're talking and stuff, and I can drink as much as I want because I'm not going to be driving anywhere or like returning to my children at all. And I don't have to get up early with them the next morning. I just in talking to my wife, generally the conversation goes like this. We talk about the children, even though we're not with them. We talk about them. And then we start talking about each other's jobs. And it made me realize I don't know much about my wife's job. Like, it's really, and I don't think she knew a ton about mine either, because it's not ever a point of conversation for us. When we are in the house with the kids, it's always like, here are the pertinent things you need to know about my upcoming week, and like stuff like that. Or like, are we going to get, we have to figure out camps every single day for Ronan during summer break so that we're not working with him in the house. That kind of stuff. And to sit there and like have her talk about the things, the goings on of her job, which would be like normal things that we would talk about back before we had children. I was shocked that I didn't know so much about her job.
I'm off the hook because I'm allowed to not know anything about her job, but yes. I do see her posting things on Twitter, and she does seem to be a pretty big deal in whatever her field is.
Yeah, it's just, and like I'm circling
it. Her field seems important.
I'm going to find out what that field is any day now. That's not true. I know she works in environmental policy. She helps like do these research projects that inform environmental policy in cities like Los Angeles, primarily Los Angeles County, but also kind of all over the country. But if you like ask me to like drill down and be like, all right, well, what are some of those research projects? I'd be like, well, that's complicated.
I mean, it's not your responsibility to understand all of her research projects, so I'll give you a softball. What does she do every day at her job?
There's a lot of there's like some website building for some reason that I don't totally understand. Like, that's the thing that where when she's kind of exacerbated, I'm not exasperated, where she's exasperated and she'll be like, well, it's just, I've got, what's his name, working on the website, and it's, I just can't edit all of his copy. I need him to be able to just write some of it. And I'm like, I don't know what this website is. It sounds important though. but I do know like, she's like working with other people to ensure that they get grants that can fund these research projects, and then finding the people that are going to be doing the actual studies. I know that like there's a big portion of her job, which is ensuring that a bunch of people are all organized and headed towards one direction, like working on one project together, even though they have very disparate roles, and making sure that everything's covered. And that if stuff slips through the gaps, that she can then take over and do that work. And that sounds like a nightmare to me. It sounds like a job I would be terrible at.
And it's fair to say that like, You mentioned environmental causes and grants and research. It's fair to say that, like, broadly, she is on the let's save the world, let's save the environment.
Yeah,
path of things. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, her
sustainability or whatever.
Sustainability. Yeah, and like making sure that we're not going to all die in a generation. I don't know that she actually has a lot of say over that, but she's certainly working towards that goal. And in a way where it's, boy, working at a job where I just do jokes all day, it's, boy, do you feel, it makes you feel like pretty insignificant. Like, she's actually doing work to try to save the world. And then I jump in and I'm like, yeah, but like, laughter's super important too.
There are so many threats to your privacy and your cybersecurity everywhere, so you need something like Avast to help protect you. Avast is a global leader in cybersecurity for more than 30 years and trusted by over 435 million users. Avast empowers you with digital safety and privacy, no matter who you are, where you are, or how you connect. Enjoy the opportunities that come with being connected on your terms. Avast's new all-in-one solution, Avast One, helps you take control of your safety and privacy online through a range of features. Learn more about Avast One at avast.com. Avast is great. Avast One is great. They want to help you with all of your privacy and security needs online. Antivirus, they've got award-winning antivirus that stops viruses and malware from harming your devices. They do data breach monitoring, enabling you to find out if your online accounts have been compromised and whether your passwords need to be changed. Always helpful. You've also got ransomware protection. Secures your personal photos, documents, and other files from being modified, deleted, or encrypted by ransomware attacks. Avast One offers both free and premium options. Avast prevents over 1.5 billion attacks every month. And with Avast One, you can confidently take control of your online world without worrying about viruses, phishing attacks, ransomware, hacking attempts, and other cyber crimes. Learn more about Avast One at avast.com. There's sometimes, because we'll research and write jokes about very serious and like real threats to the world, including the environment, at work. And I get so steeped in this research that I think, how are future generations going to look back on this period and they're just going to think, how did anyone work at any job that wasn't hyper-focused on saving the world? Why would anyone choose anything else? Because I look at it like it's a, like, boy, this is a real hands-on-deck situation. Not for me, of course. Not these hands. These hands have to tickle the muse to write jokes.
At least yours is like somewhat related. Like people do watch Last Week Tonight to get informed and to learn about policy and stuff like that and be like, figure out where to put their ire, you know? And yeah. I don't have that. I just wrote an episode. I finished an episode today writing my...
You finished it today. I know you were working on it. How you feeling, man?
Well, that actually leads me to my first quick question for you. Are you all right jumping into the show? Is that okay with you? Oh, okay, great. Dan, quick question.
That's right with me.
How do you know if something you've written is good? I don't mean that in like a silly, facetious way. I mean like after you write something, have you ever looked at it without showing it to anybody yet and been like, yeah, this is really good? Have you ever thought that? No.
Not once. No.
No.
Things have been finished. That's usually what I go by is a thing is due now. The guiding principle had cracked when I had a weekly column, which I could not do again for the rest of my life, I don't think, was I was responsible for a piece of site real estate every Friday at 5 o'clock in the morning. So something was going to occupy that real estate every Friday at 5 o'clock in the morning. And it wasn't always ready, but it was always done. That was just kind of the thing that made sure the work got done. And I think made me an asset to Jack and Jason as a reliable occupier of space.
Right. But they never came to you and they're like, hey, that column is really good.
No.
No,
I mean Jack would say nice things. He was good about positive reinforcement, but like even to this day, I'm still very well. I'm going to hand in. I don't know how to hand in. I don't know how to write this last week's night script. I have no idea how to do it. I know I'm going to because I can't imagine the scenario in which I don't because I've always handed in the thing I'm supposed to hand in. But even a thing I handed in literally a week ago today, I hit send and I thought like I should reach out to my boss and apologize in advance. I should tell him it's okay if he doesn't want to do this, that I won't hurt my feelings, and then I'll try harder next time.
I only had the epiphany when you and I talked about this offline recently, where I was like, this is basically how it works when I write. I will write something, I will look at it and be like, this is probably bad. There's like blind spots that I'm not seeing. There's issues with this. I know that it's not what I wanted it to be. This is a disaster. Maybe I'm not good at this. And then I will turn it in and I will give it to people. And what I get then is if somebody outside of myself will give me some sort of validation about it, where they're like, oh, this is good. No, it's really funny. Then I start believing that. And I start being like, ah, that's the narrative. This is good. Like, I always knew this was good. This has always been great. I am a great writer. And then I will start like thinking that this thing that I've written is good. And then the next time that I write, and I'm writing and I'm writing and I'm like, this is bad, this is bad. Why am I no good at this? I'll reread something that I've previously done and think, ah, this is what I knew how to write. This is so good.
Yeah. I don't know if this is, because this particular piece that I'm talking about did receive a lot of positive feedback from bosses and different staff members. And good. It was all very humbling and nice. And I don't know if this is imposter syndrome or some other thing wrong with my brain, but I still don't totally trust that I'm good at this.
Yeah.
I'll receive positive feedback from something and I'm like, well, I know I'm not a good writer, because if I was a good writer, I'd be better at this, and I'm not. So maybe writing has gotten worse.
So the only answer, when you write something and people think it's good, the only answer is that the entire bar for writing in the world has dropped.
Yeah,
to
those
beat
people
your,
just
you.
Those people just haven't read all the great things that I've read, so they don't know how good writing can be.
Yeah, it's so hard. I mean, I first of all, I hate it. I hate the process of writing. I hate how daunting it is. I hate when I'm in the middle of it. I hate sitting there, erasing the word "the" in a sentence, then putting it back, then erasing it again, changing it to "a" instead of "the," like that kind of shit, like the ticky-tack shit that goes into all writing. Every single stage of it, I'm like, this is torture, this is torture, this is torture. When I'm done, I'm like, well, at least it's done, but I don't feel good about it. And it's not until I get any sort of like criticism or response from the outside world that I feel anything about it, like that it might be okay. And so Jack used to tell us not to read comments on our columns. So I had a column that was on Mondays. We like bookended the week, and I would finish it by 4:30 in the morning and get it up on the site by 5. And then afterwards I would hear nothing from anybody from the site. So I'd be like, well, I have to at least take a scatter plot of a heat check from the comments. So like, I got to read the comments to make sure that like, this isn't completely off base and not everybody is saying the exact same thing. Because even though you can't trust individual comments necessarily, you can get a good scatter plot of like how generally people feel about a thing. And not always, granted, not always does that mean that it was good or bad, but at least like I knew what people thought.
Yeah.
And then that was that, after that I was like, ah, I see, this is good. Or, ah, I see, no, this is no good. this was bad. This was a bad idea. And I'll say that the few times in my life that I've ever written something and then at the end been like, you know, I think that's really good, I was fucking wrong. I was off. Like, there's some huge thing that I was missing about it that I just couldn't see the forest through the trees and I fucked up.
Yeah. I feel like, I think I've mentioned this before. I'm trying to think back on other things that I've written, and it's rare that I'll come across something and think, that's very good, or that's better than I remember it, or like, wow, this is some really great writing. But I've gone over things that I've done in the past and was surprised at how much fun I was having with it. That's something that I don't... It comes up in the How to Fight Presidents book that I wrote, available in wherever books are sold. And that's something that I hardly ever revisit, but when I do, and it's just like every chapter is a balls out, no rules, no one over my shoulder, no immediate feedback from the audience. It's just me. It's every chapter is the process of me being alone with my thoughts for 8 months. And I look at that and I'm like, you were having a little fun. Like I could see when I get a little bit silly, and I could see where my lack of an editor made me perhaps sometimes a little too free. And I certainly the joy comes out more than anything else. And that is a helpful reminder to me, because I don't always think of writing as a joyful thing, but I can see that it's in there.
I guess.
And you can see it in your own, like we were just doing Alex Schmidt's podcast on Monday, and off the podcast you were explaining to him the plot of your Scottie Pippen episode, and it's clear that you're enjoying it, not in a narcissistic way. You're tickled by like, like the idea of this other Soren that you don't know who came up with all these silly things for Scottie Pippen to do.
Yeah. Yes. I guess you're right. There are things that I will reread and be like, oh, this was a, like, you're really taking a risk here. You didn't know if this joke would work. Like, this is a different type of joke where you're just like trying new stuff in it.
Yeah.
In what you've written. And you're like, oh, I was really experimenting. Interesting. And it's like, there's no like sense of good or bad then either. I guess you're just sort of like proud of yourself for being like, well, you're, look at you taking your shot. Like,
yeah.
Look at you trying something new. Yeah, so I finished this episode. I have no idea how it is. I turn it in because it's due. And I don't know. Like, the way that it works at my job is I will probably never know because I guess this is my other question. After an episode airs and you did a segment, because you don't write entire episodes, right? You do segments?
Yeah, everything is written with, every script is written with two or three writers. They each write their drafts. They get combined into one master draft. And then if there are gaps or jokes that need punching up, more writers will get brought in. So everything is a tremendous group effort.
Okay. So after you've written something, and if you feel any sort of ownership over it, because like you wrote a good portion of it or you're excited about it, at the end, what is your, like, when the reviews are in, where are those reviews? Who are you actually, who are you turning to be like, this, they liked it or they didn't like it?
What do you mean? Like,
I'll give you an example. So
the audience
show,
or exactly. at work?
I think both. So
okay.
At work, it's very tough for me to tell. I assume it's tough for most people to tell because the job of a boss is to not be super candid when people are at their most vulnerable and be like, this is no good. This is crap. Because you can really fuck somebody up that way. But you say, hey, this is great. This is great. I think we're just a few things we're going to need to change. And then you get a sense of how it actually is by how much actually gets stripped and gutted. But when it goes out to the world, I don't have a sense of like how an audience, when they watch it on TBS or they watch it on Cartoon Network, how they feel about the show. There's very few places where you can go and see like, oh, this, I know that this website does reviews of our show. You can read it, but that's one individual person who's like also on a deadline and is also trying to write something where they're like, what's an interesting point I can make? What's an interesting point? Like, it's the same situation. They're not completely candid with how they actually felt about it. Cause sometimes the answer is, it was fine. And you can't just write that. Like you can't be a criticism. That can't be like the critique of it. So you have that. And then you also have, I think probably Reddit. And I know that a number of other writers on my show will go to like Reddit and just kind of see, like, get a heat check for their episode. And I'm like, I can't think of anything worse than going to Reddit and like trying to like sift through some weirdos who go to an American, oh man, I'm going to alienate my entire audience here. Sift through people who are going to go to an American Dad thread and say how much they hate the show. Because what a weird impulse that is to do that over and over and over again. You would just stop watching, I'd assume.
Yeah.
Instead of doing that over.
I think it would be really gratifying for you to see, and I don't know if this is, I'm certain it's not possible, but really gratifying for you to see who in our industry that I know and respect likes your show and watches your show. It just came up. They're like one of the only other podcasts that I listen to, The Flagrant Ones, has three of the funniest people I know of in the world: Hayes Davenport, Sean Clements, and Carl Tart. And American Dad comes up a bunch, and they clearly all know the show and are fans of the show. And I bet it would be really nice if you told the writers of American Dad that you like their show. I understand that as someone who, like, I would never do that. I love plenty of shows, and I don't just, like, I'm not going to reach out to Stephanie Robinson and just say, hey, I really like What We Do in the Shadows, keep it up. But I guess that would be a good practice to start doing, because otherwise they'll just never know. Like, you don't know how many funny people wandering around our industry know and like your show very much.
God, that'd be great to know. I would love that. I did see, so American Dad was on at Atlanta recently. It was just like on in the background in Atlanta.
As a crossover? Oh, okay.
And when, like, so when we talked about it in our thread, our WhatsApp thread, people are like, oh yeah, we've heard that. We've heard that that Donald Glover is a huge American Dad fan. And I was like gushing about that. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Donald Glover likes my show? And like in love with the idea of that. And it is, you really kind of like, more so than when you write for the internet, you're just sort of like writing into the dark. I think it's maybe different for Last Week Tonight because you do get a lot of celebrities who are politically minded who are then retweeting it with some sort of editorializing over the top of it.
Yeah.
Or like writing, putting it on whatever social channels they've got, like Josh Molina and like Patton Oswalt, people like that are like, oh, John Oliver's nailing it. Like whatever it is. Like they pull out a segment. They like to, it's designed to be cut up and like given back out to the world.
I mean, there's nothing I could do for my career when Bradley Whitford is like so important. And I'm like, cool. You want to, can you do Billy Madison too with me? I read it.
It just feels like you're kind of like writing into a void, and you do get some feedback at work, but in terms of like the general populace, you have no idea how it's being gauged out there or like what the consensus is about what you're doing. And maybe there is no such a thing. Maybe it is all just individuals and there's no pulse.
Yeah.
There's no collective pulse where they're like, this is good, this is bad.
And that's why, I guess, it's especially rough, like what we were talking about at the beginning, just the act of like turning something in and stressing over it. That is a part of this whole job/existence that I've committed myself to fully. If you know you might not get a response from your boss or your peers, and you might not get a response from an audience, there is also no way to internally know that something is good or as good as it can be. And I just hand in a thing that I stress about every single assignment I hand in and have handed in for my entire 15-year professional writing career. And every time I hand it in, I'm like, this is so bad. I'm so embarrassed. Why did I pick this job? Why didn't I pick a job I'd be better at?
Yeah.
No one made me pick this job. I'm not like that. Living in a small town, and they're like, "Hey, we need one writer," and we picked your name out of a hat. I signed up for this. I should have picked something that I knew I could do better.
Not just signed up, less you pursued stress. It. Like you doggedly pursued it. It wasn't like, oh, at career day you picked it, and like, fuck, I shouldn't have picked that day. No, it's like something you continue at every single turn. You were like, yeah, this is the one. This is still the one.
I moved 3,000 miles twice.
I think about back when I was in school and I would have to write essays and stuff, and I would always be like, that was the worst part of school. The worst part of school was I knew I had a paper coming up. I knew I had a day that it was due, and I was just gonna have to buckle down and like really think about this, the color purple or whatever it was, and go write an essay about it. And I hated that so much that I dreaded it. Like, I'd do all my other homework first and like get it out of the way, because I knew that was going to be the easy stuff. It was like the essay that was going to be hard. And then you and I had a decade-long career just writing essays.
Yeah. it's so wild to think about. Like, both of my brothers are, as far as I'm concerned, experts in their various fields. One of them is an occupational therapist. One of them is a musician / music teacher / minister of music. And they're both great. And they know how to talk to patients. They know, like, my music teacher brother is the most patient guy on the planet, and he gets students who are all over the spectrum of skill level, and he knows how to talk to all of them and like exercises to give them to make them better at music that day than when they came in, or at the very least to make them feel better about their own playing than they did when they came in that morning. And my other brother, the occupational therapist, just like knows stuff about the body and how it works. I complained to him with shoulder pain, and he starts like listing off the names of bones and like does a couple of quick tests to see like if he can assess what this shoulder pain could be. And he just knows stuff, and there's no version of their occupations where he comes home from work and he's like, I don't know about this one today. This one kind of got away from me. I worked on some people with some pretty serious spinal injuries, and I really don't think that's my thing. I should have had someone else do it. I feel bad. I hope my boss isn't mad. I really fucked up that person's body.
I was just feeling weird today. I was in a weird mood, so it came out strange. or like the music that happened to be on was making me feel really odd. So I just did kind of a different thing. Yeah, that just, that shit doesn't happen.
Yeah. It was raining, and sometimes when it rains, I don't feel like helping someone walk again. I don't know. I do a worse job of it, or I do a job of it that's like derivative of something that we did a couple of seasons ago.
Yeah. I did it, and I thought it was pretty good. I thought I did a pretty good job, and then I remembered that like I had done an identical thing two weeks ago, and like I had just forgotten that it was me, and so I basically like plagiarized myself trying to get this guy to walk again. Yeah, I don't know. I never feel good about a thing, and then when I do feel good about it, it's like it's so hollow. It's like based on like the with three different people who might have said it was nice. Yeah. and whether they're being honest or not, you never know. It's just, there's no metric. That's the problem in our job. There's no like quantifiable metric for what makes something good. We used to work at a company called, Demand Media. We used to work at this company called Demand Media, and they were in a real hunt to create as much content as they could. And there was, at one point we had a big party because our CEO noticed that we had, our articles every day, we are generating enough articles that we are writing more words than there are in War and Peace. And I was so demoralized by that. Yeah. Because it meant no one gives a shit, man. No one cares what if something's good or not, or what that even means, because it's different for everybody. And like, so many people's idea of what's good is dependent on other people saying that it's good. And I'm like, oh shit, that's me. Yeah. And that's my stuff, and I don't know if it's good.
But I mean, the vaguer thing is also weird and scary. And there are some times when this will make me sound shitty and like the opposite of humble imposture that I've been this whole time. But sometimes I'll write a weird joke and the audience won't totally be on board with it. And I'll immediately just think like, well, the audience is wrong today. And I'm not even just saying that as a joke on this podcast. I feel that in my body. Well, it's like, yeah, I mean, they don't laugh at everything. And, you know, sometimes they're wrong. I thought it was good. My boss thought it was good. My coworkers liked it. The natural conclusion to that is, what does the audience know? And I'm not going to say that. I'm not even going to think it.
I'll think it for you.
Thanks, buddy.
Do you know why free trials renew without your consent? It's because it's part of their business plan. That is a feature, not a bug for them. So don't let the greedy corporations pocket your money. Download Truebill to take control of your subscriptions. By law, most states don't have to disclose when subscriptions renew. So get a hold of your subscriptions with Truebill. Find out what you have subscriptions to, whether you still need that subscription. And if you don't and you just sort of forgot about it, Truebill will just cut it off and save you money every single year. Truebill is the new app that helps you identify and stop paying for subscriptions that you don't need. Average people, just like you, save up to $720 a year with Truebill. Because companies make subscriptions hard to cancel, Truebill makes it incredibly simple. It's like sending your buddy to the gym to do your cancellation instead of you. That third party really helps out a lot. Just link your accounts and Truebill will cancel your unwanted subscriptions in one tap. And your Truebill concierge is there when you need them to cancel unwanted subscriptions, so you don't have to. Truebill has over 2 million users and helped save them over 100 million. Like Matthew B., who says, in a matter of seconds, I saved $660 for the year on my DirecTV bill, saved $120 for the year on my SiriusXM bill, and saved $840 a year on my car insurance. I want to be like Matthew. So don't fall for subscription scams. Start canceling today at Truebill.com/QQ. Go right now. Truebill.com/QQ. It could save you thousands a year. Truebill.com/QQ. Don't be afraid to quit. Well, it's good to know that we're all in the same boat. I think that a lot of people probably feel this way. That a lot of people like have never written anything and at the end been like, ah, a masterpiece.
But I mean,
and I think that's fine.
Let me try to walk back that audience thing. Because I think if there was a metric for success, I think you would reject it. It doesn't need to be, because that's
oh, yeah,
who you are as a writer, and that's what it takes to be a writer. Of the many random magical things that go into being a writer, one of the things, in my opinion, that it takes to be a writer is rejection of metrics like that. Like, it doesn't have to be me saying the audience is wrong here, but if someone at Demand Media says, this is the most words, then you know that that's bullshit. Or some fuck from some other startup could invent some algorithm that will determine what is the best article or the best episode, and you would still, as a writer in you, reject that. Don't you think?
I think so. I'm trying to think of, like, there's a single person that I guess I would respect only their opinion above all else. And I guess there are, like, a three people like that in my life, where if I showed it to them and they were like, I don't know, I feel like I could use a few more drafts. Or they're like, this is really great. I would be like, it is great. It is really great. and believe them. But that's only because I know that those are people who would be candid with me. And that's the other aspect of our job, is that you're so vulnerable when you just create something that everybody's aware of that. They're like keenly aware in your circles anyway. They know that if it's not good, you don't just come out and say to that person, it's not good. Cause yeah. That's devastating. Cause it means it's like a reflection on them. It means you're not good.
Right.
And that's hard to swallow. And so instead there's different ways to couch it and add a little sugar to the medicine and I'm always worried that I'm not catching on to that it's like it's happening to me and I'm just like oblivious to it.
Yeah.
And that's just a scary, I don't know. It's maybe this is not valuable to anybody but us, but it is, I think it's probably nice to know that everybody deals with this.
Yeah. I wonder if this is related or not. I was going to talk about it anyway, but in the time since we've recorded podcasts, I had a race because, you know, I run Soren.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Can I make a couple of guesses about what's going on here?
Sure.
Okay. First of all, I want to guess that this is probably a 5K.
No, it was not.
Okay. Did you create a playlist to go along with it?
No. It was a very low stakes race.
So did you train at all for this race?
No.
Okay. That's all right. I'm all caught up.
This was January of this year. Once I settled into a new town, I was just Googling around, like, what are all of the local races coming up? Cause I like to sign up for a couple races a year, once every couple of months, I think. And this was one of the first ones that was happening. It was a 2.2 miler, which is a nothing distance. And it's 2.2 because people wear tutus. It's a charity for Boys and Girls Club of America. Mm-hmm. And it's very low stakes, very not competitive. A lot of people walk it. It's really quick. And I was like, yeah, I can bang this out before work. I'm not going to train for it because I'm never only running 2.2 miles when I run ever. I'm always like minimum doing a 3K.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to do like really focused training on, all right, well, let me start sprinting miles every day, because that wouldn't have been fun training for me, really. So I was like, I'm going to just do this race and I'm going to show up. And Soren, it was a not competitive race. Not a lot of people showed up for it, but I still never get to say stuff like this. Sixth place, baby.
How many people were there?
Hundreds. At least 100.
And you got sixth.
Yeah, fifth male, sixth place. And it's
that's awesome, Dan. That's so cool. That must have been so exciting.
It's the first time I've gotten, I don't get a medal or anything like that, but they give awards, in quotes, to top finishers. And this is the first race I've ever had an award in, and I feel awesome. I know it was not competitive. I know that a lot of the other organizations that I've run with, I will continue to not place or get any awards. But it felt really fucking cool. First time doing this thing. Felt happy with my time. But I think it ties into how I feel about myself as a writer, where it's like, yeah, I'm not fast. It was just a slower race and everyone around me was worse.
You immediately start qualifying it. I'm like, why you did so well? This can't be right. This can't be right. Oh, look, I think everyone got injured.
If this was a real race, I'd have lost.
No, were you wearing a tutu when you did this?
Sure was, buddy.
You didn't train for it, though, which means that had you trained for it, fuck, you could have placed even higher than that, I bet. How close behind number five were you?
I was right behind her. And I thought, if I was feeling shittier, I thought, I can maybe catch her. I didn't know that she was a first place woman. So I'm glad that I didn't, because it's also bad form to like sprint ahead of someone at the very end of the race, because she had me beat the whole 2.2.
Yeah.
And I felt a little bit in my tank at the end where I was like, if I want to sprint past this lady, I could probably do that, but I didn't. And I'm glad I didn't, but I was right on her heels. And the person after me was a ways back.
Okay. And could you see first place finish?
I didn't see him finish. No, he was a full 2 minutes faster than I was.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's a lot. Well, but you also didn't know, you still have like, you still have fuel in the tank. It means that you didn't know throughout the rest of the race how to spread that out.
No.
You were just sort of like
Which
guessing.
I never do. I'm never really good at that particular thing. It's when we got closer to the end and I saw like the big clock that tells you your time when you finish, I was surprised that we were done already.
Yeah. Oh man. That's so you could have been fifth and but you would have it would have been bad form. Dan, that's awesome. That's so cool. Out of hundreds of people, and you smoked them.
I smoked people who were like dressed up in costumes and having a good time.
But you were also, it was a level playing field. You were also in a costume and having a good time, supposedly.
Yeah.
That's really great, man. Congratulations. I've never felt that before. I've never been in a situation where it's been a big competition and I came out in like top 10 and look at that.
There's nothing you can, it's hard to not have a little bit of an ego about it because every step of the way, I was like, this is not a competitive race. People are having fun. It's like by design, they're having fun. Look at all the walkers. And then smash cut to a day later, I'm refreshing the website. I'm like, when are they going to post the fucking results? I got to see my name up there. Come on. Take a screenshot for my dad.
You would have, and had it been all women, you would have won. Right? That's what I'm understanding.
Sure.
I wonder if you're allowed to do that for first place. I wonder, even in a thing like this, if you were that close behind somebody who was in first, if you were like, I think I'd rather be first, and you just went ahead of them.
I don't know. I'm always curious because you'll see some race finishes like that. Like I've watched a bunch of videos on YouTube where someone who's clearly in first slows down and like puts their arms up to celebrate a bit, and then someone just zips past them. And I guess part of that is hubris of the guy putting his hands up to celebrate prematurely. But another part of it is just like, you know, it's the end of the race, right? And like that was the guy who was winning the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah. So I did a stair climb a few years ago, which have you ever done one of those before?
Sort of. We did this thing, relay that I did in college with my brother and my dad called the Urban Athlon, where you run and you do a bunch of street obstacles. You're hopping over hurdles of like traffic dividers. And my portion of the relay was up and down, I think 52 flights of stairs in one of the World Trade Center buildings, not one of the RIP ones, like a different World Trade Center building. Mm-hmm. It's just like a narrow, lots of stairs inside. Awful, awful time.
Yeah, hot, no air. Yeah. It's they're terrible. So I did one of those, and it was similar. It's like 50 stairs or 50 levels, something like that. And I did not train for it, but I came into it hot, thinking like, I can see the top of the building from here. How bad could this be? this is gonna be a breeze. It's like I came out of the gates hot. Like I came out like sprinting up four stairs at a time and stuff. And then got to like level eight and was like, ooh, I got a lot to go. but like stuck with it in a way where you can only do when it's your first time and you don't know how much gas to burn, where you're like, you overexert yourself and you do too much and you try and do it too fast and you do end up doing it. It's just at the end, I was like throwing up at the top. And at the end of it, I was like, I went past so many people in those stairs. I feel like I probably did pretty well.
Then
I saw the results and I got absolutely annihilated by like 400 people because there are people who just travel around doing these. They don't go do races. They do stair climbs and they have a strategy. They have like the outfit that's perfect for it. Like whatever it is they have, they use the railing. It's one hand, two hands, pull, one hand, two hands, pull. And like they know the system to get them up the fastest. And I knew none of that. I just like stumbled up the stairs as fast as I could and threw up at the top and then thought I won.
Did you, so you said throw up at the top. Did you, there wasn't a down component to your stairs?
No. I mean, everybody walked back down afterwards, but that was not right. Part of the, I think it's maybe it's, with most stair climbs, I think that's maybe too dangerous to ask
our,
people
ours
to do
ours going thing. Down was part of it. And that was my whole thinking as a 20-year-old with bones made of rubber. I was like, this is where I'm going to make up the time I lost being slow going up. It's just like straight legs slamming my heels into every step, just like fucking zooming down it like a moron. And you could see experienced people who were like, oh, he doesn't know. He doesn't know about his shins tomorrow.
Yeah, just the muscle starts to separate from the shin. Yeah, that's a bummer. Yeah, I got to the top and didn't really enjoy it. Like, people are like, what was the view like? I'm like, I have no idea. It was hot and it was bright because I'd been in a dark stairway for so long. And I think there might have been a helicopter pad, but it's hard to tell because I was throwing up on it.
Yeah, someone spilled puke all over the roof.
And then, like, other people who had finished were looking at me like, what? Why did you do that? What did you get out of that? I was like, you don't understand. I'm probably first place. In my mind, I'm thinking, nah, just wait till the results come in. You'll understand.
I didn't give a shit about it at the time, and I certainly don't now, but I definitely remember finishing the LA Marathon, the only marathon I will ever do, and finished in some not impressive amount of time. 5 hours, maybe. Okay. I don't remember what it was, but it was not good. And I wasn't going for time. I was really just like, let me try to finish a marathon and see if I can do it. But I still, in like the, certainly the back half, probably back quarter of the finishers, put my arms up in celebration when I finished the, when I crossed the finish line, and you could hear the announcer laugh about it.
That's humbling.
This guy's feeling really good about his 6 hour time.
Is that good?
Couple of walkers right behind him. Yeah. Not feeling as pleased with themselves.
Someone seems to have stopped for some ice cream along the way. He's also finishing now. I do remember as a kid, there's a race called the Boulder Boulder in Colorado, which is like a 6 mile race. And my dad and I trained for it. I can't remember how old I was. I must have been like 11. And we would run from my house, which is out in the woods, into town. And that was like 6.5 miles or whatever. And he had to like run along a highway and stuff. And so training for it, I felt good. It was like the first race I'd ever done. And I thought, I think I'll win this. And then went and did it. And in the middle of it, got kind of tired and just walked for like 30 seconds and then got mad at myself and started running. And I still think about that all the time. I'm like, that I didn't run the whole thing. That I, for whatever reason, I stopped and slowed down and walked some. And then was like, no, you shouldn't do this. And then ran. But it was too late. Like, the damage was done. And so when the results came in, my dad was like, look, for your age group, you were in 13th place. That's amazing. And I was like, yeah, but I didn't really do the race. And like mad at myself.
I do Orange Theory with my friend Susan every Monday. I think I mentioned this. And it's normally just like circuit training, high intensity interval training stuff. And every once in a while, they will throw in some new element, like once a quarter. They'll just announce like, hey, on this day, we're doing the Catch Me If You Can challenge, which is specific when you're on the treadmill. You have to maintain a certain amount of distance. And you have like a chart that says at 2 minutes in, you need to be at quarter of a mile or whatever it is. And then at 4 minutes in, you need to be at this or whatever it is. And you go that way up until 18 minutes. And the times in between get shorter and shorter, which is how it makes, like, you know, you have 2 minutes to do a quarter of a mile. Great. And then as it gets to the end, you've already been running for 15 minutes. Then they start checking in with you every 30 seconds. You need to be here. You need to be there. And there's less room, obviously, for you to make up ground if you're getting slower. And the game of it is, if you're not where you're supposed to be, then you're caught. You know, you're being chased, quote unquote. And if you're not where you're supposed to be, you're caught and you're out. And then you just sort of run for personal best to put your score down and try to beat it the next time you do Catch Me If You Can. And as soon as I heard about this challenge, I was like, there's no fucking way in hell I'm getting caught in this thing, because I run every day. It's the main thing that I do. And I could see like the simple way to cheat and to not cheat, but like to ensure that you get the distance that you need to get for every checkpoint is to just run at 8.6 speed the entire time, which is a thing I can do. And I even started faster than that because I wanted to give myself some very, very comfortable breathing room. And I had it for so long that I'm just looking down when coach would be like, all right, at this point, you guys need to be at 0.75 mile. And I'm looking down and I'm at 1.1 miles. I'm like, this is in the bag.
Yeah.
And at some point in this challenge, I just decided to go slower. Mm-hmm. Just like, well, let me...
Took the foot off the gas.
I think, yeah, my plan was going to be like, and then for the last minute and a half, I'm really going to just burn it. So let me like, let me rest up to that. Let me earn that. I've got enough of a lead on this fictional chaser that I can slow down to 7.5 or 7, whatever I was doing. I can slow down to that for a minute. And I got caught by the fucking guy. And I was so shocked. I was sitting there thinking I'm the hero in The Tortoise and the Hare, a book I started but am not done with yet. And I can't... I can't even... I'm still to this minute just thinking like... Because no matter what, I can run uncomfortably for 18 minutes. I don't even know why I would ever slow down ever in my life. I could, like, it's only 18 minutes, you stupid fuck.
Wait, is this on a treadmill?
This is on a treadmill, yeah.
And so you're going... That's part of my... You got it set to 8.6?
Yeah.
Oh, that's fast, Dan.
And then I slowed down, thinking I've created enough of a buffer here.
You got a cushion.
But I'll be fine. But it really catches up to you.
That's crazy. And you got caught.
I got caught.
Oh, that's humiliating.
It really is.
Oh, that's like worse than just being slow.
Right.
To get caught for a stupid reason.
Yeah, I was too dumb. It's clearly stupidity and hubris. It's really just me being like, all right, I 8.6 has been the necessary speed this whole time, but maybe 7 will be the necessary speed now.
If it makes you feel any better, when I go run on a treadmill, I'll run for like, sometimes usually it's going to be for half an hour, but sometimes I'll be like, oh, I got to get to work or whatever, so I'll only do it for 20 minutes. And 7 is going to be pretty fast for me. Even setting it to 7, I'm like, oof, that's Soren, you're really gunning it. I think everyone in the gym is taking notice because this is fast. I'm really comfortable at like a 6.7, honestly.
Yeah.
So that's good. That's really good.
Thank you. I just hate running on treadmills so much. So that's another one of my problems where I'm really feeling how fast that is and how long it is. And I think I'm definitely overall faster when I'm running out in the world. I think I can obviously run a faster mile if I'm on a treadmill and I could see the time and just decide like, oh, okay, this is how I could see. I just press the buttons and now I'm faster so I can get a better time. But I hate being on a treadmill and I can't do any of the fun disassociation that is so crucial to my running strategy when I'm just on this thing, especially if coach is there. And he's like, all right, just maintain. We're going to do all out pace now for 3 minutes. And you could just stare at a clock that is a digital clock clicking down to 3 minutes. I was like, that's not helpful for me to see.
No, it's
when I'm running. I'm not supposed to know how far or how much time I need to do this.
Yeah, I found that
That's why that fucking guy caught me, Soren. he knew it was a mental game.
When you and I did our playlist to try and like rush through a 5K, and I built that and then I ran to the playlist, I did it. And I was like, hey, you did it. I never want to do that again. I hate the feeling of like getting to that last song and being like, okay, you got to time this out perfectly. Or like, this is where you really got to rush. The entire time thinking about like basically having these songs count me down to the finish was so bad. I hated it. Because then you're also like, looking for drags in the song. You're like, oh, this part, I forgot about this noodle. I forgot that they do this like little solo here. That's good. That's going to save me some time. Like, it's not what I wanted to be focused on while I was running.
Oh, that's also another way that running and writing are very similar, is that sometimes I'm worse at running than I was before. I'll be running not to a playlist or anything. I'll just be running one of my normal routes, and I'll look down at my watch to see what my time is, and I'll be like, what? That?
No.
Yeah. But yeah. I've done it better before.
I found that I'm, and this is weird, I found that I'm way faster at night.
Why do you think so?
Can run at night where you are. Can you?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. That's real cool.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Maybe it's because it's cooler and this, like, the sun has a profound effect on me. I don't know. But I can, like, I just shred times when I run at night. Don't know why.
I never know if that's like, because I haven't been shaking things up and running super early and sometimes in the middle of the day. I used to run at night all the time, and I'm really curious what kind of pace differential that'll be, because I never know if that's like, I like running at the end of the day because I like it as my work day is done now, and now we transition into the fun stuff.
Yeah.
But I always wonder, like, I'm less conscious of like fuel or eating when I run at night, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Because just like whatever I had for lunch, whatever I snacked on during the day. Whereas now if I know like I'm going to run early, I have a window where I can run early, then I'm probably going to do it before lunch. And then when I come back for lunch, I'm going to have one of my stupid fucking salads.
Yeah, I think that maybe running at night is like, it is like writing in that I fall into focus a lot easier after a certain point of the day, where it's like, I get so distracted so easily throughout the day, and I want to be distracted. I want just like I want indulgences all day long. It's like, give me candy, give me television. Let me watch videos. Like, I want it bad. And then in the night, for whatever reason, I don't know if I trained myself this way in college or whatever it was when I write papers then, but it was like, that's when I like settle into it, and I'm really willing to just focus on one thing at a time at night. I don't tell my boss that though. I don't want to have a career where I just write at night.
I don't think they could mandate that, could they?
I don't know. I think sometimes it happens. I've heard stories about writer's room where a showrunner will be like, the best writing happens after midnight.
Oh yeah.
And then everyone being like, oh no. Yeah. Oh, I don't know if I want to work here.
I think we can wrap things up now.
Yeah, we ended up turning it into another sports podcast.
Hell yeah, we did.
We turned it
the
around.
The show is Quick Question, but you know that already. We were recorded, edited, and produced by the irreplaceable Gabe Harder. Our theme song is by the incredible Me Rex. Their digital album is available at merex.bandcamp.com. You can find me, Soren, and the show, all of us on Twitter. Me at DOB_INC, Soren at Soren_LTD, the show at QQ_Soren and Dan. Email the show at QQ with Soren and Daniel@gmail.com. We also have a Patreon you could support if you want. You get bonus exclusive questions just for the listeners who support us on Patreon.
There's something I wanted to try at the end of episodes that I've been thinking about for a while, and then I keep forgetting to do it.
Okay.
Dan, I really enjoyed talking to you.
Hey, Dan. Thanks. I really enjoyed talking to you, too.
All right, I'll talk to you later.
Bye.
I've got a quick question for you, all right? I want to hear your thoughts, I want to know what's on your mind. I've got a quick question for you, all right? The answer's not important, I'm just glad that we could talk tonight. So what's your favorite? How did you get? Find it. I think you'll have a great time here.